Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Raw Rundown. We are back. I am Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by my co-host for the Raw Rundown. But I was actually past something that I need to introduce him a different way. So just bear with me if I pull this up. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Money in the Bank on screen appearee, David J. McCutcheon. Hi, David.
Oh my goodness, I love all the roses that you've put out. There's so many rose petals everywhere. The room smells like apples and cinnamon, which is that's my new thing, by the way, guys. Since I am now a celebrity, I get to make demands. And you know how some celebrities go, well, you know, you can only I don't want any of the orange M&Ms in my bowl. My thing is, every room that I enter has to smell like a delicious fall surprise.
Which is very apples, which is very cinnamon. Difficult for David when he goes to the bathroom, obviously, because
well, I mean,
but you know, that's just things happen. diets are adhered to, and sometimes that's bad. We've not been on for 2 weeks. Robert was going to co-host with me last week, but he had an incredibly busy week of teaching. Lots of stuff was going on, so I'll
teaching
kind of,
all the kids all the swear words and
all the
and
swear
slang
words
for fannies.
Yeah, 100%.
Both American and British fannies.
All the fannies.
That's why he gets paid the big bucks.
And so I'm going to do like a little 5-minute recap of last week's show of the stuff that I liked. And we're gonna talk about Raw this week, which is very eventful. Lots going on. The dramatic horror movie-esque return of Braun Strowman. And, the reveal of Enzo's attacker. Lots of stuff. But David, how are you? It's good to have you back on the podcast.
I'm doing wonderful, Kenny. I just got back from E3. I write about games and help out with the database for CBS in my spare time, aka all of my time. And so I got to do the E3 thing. I landed in Los Angeles, Kenny, and I took a taxi to my hotel. You know how that is. You land in a foreign place, you grab a taxi, head straight over. The only issue is, Kenny, my taxi broke down on the highway.
Of all the people that I ever feel that would happen to, that would be you.
Yes, yeah, it broke down on the highway. The taxi driver is going, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. And I'm like, what's the matter? And I look around and the car is smoking. And then I go, oh, that's what the oh shit meant. He hops out, hands me my luggage, points north, and goes, yeah, your hotel's about 3 miles that way at the next exit.
Why do these things always happen to you?
So me, the heart patient, began walking 3 miles with my luggage on the highway.
I don't know why, but I know you're not this guy's size, right, at all. But I imagine when you travel that you're like John Candy in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. But instead of like shower curtain rings, you have heart surgery stories. And like, that's how you get around. And you make everyone lug this big fucking case. Anyway,
yeah,
continue.
Sure. And so I ended up walking to my hotel through Watts, by the way, a notoriously bad area in Los Angeles. Dr. Dre sings about it a lot. That's how I know my way around L.A. based on gangster rap songs. It's like, oh, there's Crenshaw Boulevard when it's packed and full of cars. I know that. That I know exactly where I am. So, yeah, I walked there. I got a horrible sunburn on my scalp because, as you know, Kenny, I am a balding man. So that was fun having that to deal with. I looked like a fucking radish for the rest of the week. And then a few days later, I'm just dead tired from work. We worked around 11 hours every day, some days less, some days more. And so the average was 11, though. So I'm sitting there and I go, I'm just going to go into a sit down restaurant, you know, just have a nice meal. So I find this place and it's, you know, about $25 a meal. So not super fancy, but expensive for someone, you know, on my wage. And so I sit down and I go, all right, I'm going to get me a grilled jalapeno chicken sandwich. It's going to be lovely. I'll even spoil and get some garlic fries. It'll be magnificent. I cannot wait for this meal, right? All of a sudden, right after I put my order in, a man comes in carrying a pizza from another restaurant and sits down in the empty booth beside me. And he is clearly agitated by something. And the waitress comes over and goes, hi, sir, can I get you anything? And then he screams, yeah, I want a fucking Sprite, you dumb bitch. To which she scurries off immediately and gets a male waiter who comes over and says, sir, does there seem to be a problem? To which he replies, yeah, I told that dumb cunt that I wanted a Sprite and she didn't get it for me. Okay, in America, the word cunt has a very different meaning from in the UK. In the UK, it's sort of a jovial...
I feel like this has escalated very quickly.
Very quickly, very quickly. I look over at the guys in the booth next to me, and, you know, we're just sort of, like, eyeballing this, and the guy starts getting out his camera, and he's like, I'm putting this on WorldStar. So, so he began filming. So... I'm just sitting there like, why? Fucking why does this always happen to me? Like, I wanted a nice sit-down meal in the quiet, you know, away from everyone and everything, and then this happens. So the guy goes, all right, the waiter goes, all right, sir, you're going to have to leave here. The guy jumps up, takes a swing at the waiter. The waiter ducks it, and it hits the security guard that he brought with him. The security guard, the guy swinging is kind of muscular, not, you know, like slightly more muscular than me, which isn't saying much. But, you know, I work out a lot, right? So, because I have to, otherwise I die. I don't know if you knew that or not, Kenny. But
you only mentioned it 17 times a podcast.
Right. So he takes a swing at this guy, hits him directly in the gut. This guy looked like fucking Brodus Clay, Kenny. So... the security guard, that is.
Wait, can I very quickly say something that might ingratiate me with some people who disagree with me?
Sure.
Do you think the guy with the pizza booked the finish to the Women's Money in the Bank match? Hey! There you go. That one was for everyone who didn't like it. Anyway.
So he takes a swing, hits the security guard. Security guard no-sells it, goes, all right, motherfucker. Grabs him, puts him in like a full Nelson, takes him down, probably dislocates his shoulder, and drags him by one arm like a fucking caveman out the door and kicks his ass out.
Excellent.
And the entire time, I pop. I'm just like, yeah, fuck that guy, you know, and like the rest of the restaurant goers. It's Los Angeles, so everybody's all hoity-toity and they don't pop for things like that. But a few of the guys around me did pop. They were like, yeah, we're also not from here. Yay, good stuff. So,
now, what I think we need to learn from this story is that when a lovely young waitress was being heckled by this gentleman, that David sat and watched. He did not at any point attempt to get up and be chivalrous or help. He thought...
I did automatically say fucking guy to the people next to me, and he overheard it and gave me a death stare.
And but... that was your cue to just shut up and just... Because, listen, David genuinely, I've been around him for like a week. He does not get a chance to eat garlic fries. So, like, if he's getting a chance to do it, murder, rapes, and pillages could be happening nearby. He's not fucking touching it. He wants those garlic fries.
Hey, now, if he would have taken a swing at the waiter and the security guard hadn't been there, yes, I would have intervened. But, hey, Brodus Clay's got this, man. Brodus Clay don't need my help. Brodus Clay is two of me. I mean, hell. And he did swiftly take that motherfucker out. It was great.
That's fantastic.
I did enjoy it.
So what you've missed is obviously when you were away, you know... with the celebrities at E3 meeting the president of Nintendo America and Xavier Woods and Samoa Joe and all that, I was
hanging out with my buddies, you mean? Yeah.
Uh-huh. Hanging out with your pals. I was away doing the tour with Chris Jericho and then went to Download Festival. Now, the thing was, originally when I'd booked all my travel to go to the Chris Jericho tour, I didn't know that we were going to Download Festival. So I was booked to come home from Dublin on the Friday afternoon. So I was like, okay, I'll go out and get drunk in Dublin. I'll go back and, you know, fly home the next day. Then I find out we've got some press access at Download. So I'm like, oh, fuck, we need to go to Download now. I say need to.
Yeah, you know, like
as a chore, right? Like, oh, no, I need to go to a festival and watch Aerosmith live. What a chore. So I go, and but when I check the flights, the only flight option that was under, like, £150 per flight with me and Corey, our tech guy, was a 6:30 a.m. flight from Dublin. So ooh. We do the show in Dublin, and then we've got to be up at like 5 a.m. right? So so a few of the Jericho and a few of the other people are going out drinking after the show, and I was like, okay, I'll come along. It's the last night. Corey's sensible and goes back to the hotel. I go out, have a couple of drinks, and then about, you know, 1 a.m. I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna go back to the hotel, get a couple hours sleep. So I get back to the hotel, and I urge you on Twitter to get in touch with me and tell me if you think I'm overreacting here or if I was within my rights. So I sure. go back and I thought, Joe, fuck it, I'm not going to get that much sleep anyway. And the election stuff was on, so I've got that on the TV, checking some emails and all that. And I thought, I'll just have a look at the room service menu. Because maybe, you know, like maybe it's a 24-hour room service menu.
Sure.
There was like three things. There was like a toasty, nachos, and something else. So I thought, well, nachos, right? Like nachos is a nice safe choice at like 2 in the morning.
You can't fuck up nachos. You take some tortilla chips and plop some cheese on there.
Funny you mention that. That's where this story goes. So I'm like, I phone up and I'm like, hey, can I order some nachos and a Diet Coke? And the guy was like, and this is by this time it's 2 a.m. And he was like, yeah, sure, no worries. It'll be with you in about 10, 15 minutes. Great. And it was like £7 for the nachos, £3 for the Diet Coke. So it was like 10 quid, right? Fine. I thought, nachos with cheese, sour cream, and salsa, I'm on board. So I wait my 15 minutes, and the door goes, and it's the lovely gentleman who works at the hotel who brings in my nachos and Diet Coke. And it has one of those, you know, those like metal things that they put over the plate?
The grand gesture to show, like, here's what's behind your nacho plate. And
exactly.
He lifts it up.
So he lifts up with this big dramatic, I almost felt there was a silent drum roll in the room.
Right,
and he
right,
lifts
of
up,
course.
And I look down at this absolute shit show that was on the plate. Because what had happened was, it was very clear to me from the look of these tortilla chips, that this
sure.
was one single packet of Doritos.
like the single serving
yeah,
lunch.
Yeah, the single, like,
right.
You know, if you buy like a multi-pack, it's
yeah,
like
yeah,
25
right, right,
grams
right.
worth of nachos.
Right.
And it's not even like the cool original ones that can masquerade as a regular tortilla. It's the tangy cheese ones.
Oh.
And then they've like slithered like 3 grams of cheddar grated on top that's so little that you can't even fucking see the cheddar.
It's not even like liquid nacho cheese?
Well, I mean, that's horrendous. Over here, what we do, which is the correct thing, is to get some good cheddar and mozzarella, put it all over it, smother it, under the oven, crispy, Bob's your uncle, and have your sour cream, your salsa. This was an abomination. It was like 10 Dorito chips with like a slithering of cheese, and then there was these like borrower sized cups that have like 1 teaspoon of salsa and 1 teaspoon of sour cream. So I see this and I start laughing because I think this is a joke. I feel like he's brought me like a gag order to pop me, and then he's gonna bring the real order in. And I went, you're not serious, right? And he was like, what do you mean? I was like, I was like, listen, I know this isn't you, but like, is this a serious order? And he was like, it's your nachos. And I was like, no, sir. This is not nachos. This is one packet of 49 pence Doritos with 13 pence worth of cheese that I've just paid £7 for at 2 in the fucking morning. And he was like, that's nachos. And I was like, no. This is not nachos. That's like getting a football and putting a fucking knife through it so it just falls apart and going, play a game. What? You can't do it. So then I sort of like, you know, was going back and forth, like, what will I do? And I thought, I have to be true to myself, David, right? I can't be someone else.
Of course not. No. You have to stand up for your self-entitled standards.
So I said, listen, I really apologize, but I'm not going to accept this order. I'm not paying for that. That's just ridiculous.
Right.
Now I had a couple of shandies at this point. So anyway, he like walks away with his tail between his legs with this horrible attempt at nachos, which I didn't know you could fuck up.
That is like the safest thing.
So then I phone the front desk because I'm pissed now. Because I've waited 20 minutes, I'm hungry. And I said, excuse me, can I just ask you if you have ever seen the portion of nachos that you serve to people in room service? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, is that a joke? And he's like, what do you mean? And I said, that's criminal. What you're charging for what you give is criminal. I was like,
How much were they?
£7.
£7? Okay.
You could have fed a school class if you bought them at retail. So now I'm obviously I'm prepared, right? Because I'm not an idiot.
You are clearly prepared. So if there's one way to describe Kenny McIntosh, it is prepared to be an ass.
I'm not an ass. You can't expect me to pay for that. I'm not going to pay for that. £7. So I said, listen. I said, I think you either need to like half the price of them. Or explain to people, like, because what it said was nachos, and it said a serving of tortilla chips with plenty of cheese, salsa, and sour cream. There was no plenty of nothing apart from a big fucking silver plate thing. So he said, "Would you like us to have another go at the nachos?" And I was like, "No, I'm okay, but thank you very much. Nice offer." I said, "I'm just wanting to." Convey to you as a customer that I don't think that's really a fair assessment of what you've advertised on
right,
your menu.
Right.
And he went, "Is there anything I can do?" And I was like, "Well, you know, it's 2 a.m. I've got to be up at 5. I think we just need to kind of call it a night." And he said, "Well, sir, I'd like to just offer anything on the menu to you for free." And I said, "I'll have a ham and cheese toasted with a Diet Coke, please. Thank you." And 10 minutes later, my free meal arrived. And I fell asleep with a full stomach. My ham and cheese toastie had cheese bubbling out of it, like molten lava.
Do you know what else it had bubbling out of it?
Oh, I don't give a fuck. Tasted good. He could have jizzed in that. At least it tasted good, and at least there was more than 3 grams of it. And I fell asleep for about 90 minutes, and I woke up, and the ham and cheese toastie reappeared in a different form because it was horrendous. But it was free, so it tasted great. And I woke up, had a slight tear run down my face because I had 2 hours sleep and I'm a pussy when it comes to no sleep. But the tale is, ladies and gentlemen, there's a lot going on in the world right now. There's a lot of trials and tribulations and horrible things going on.
So we
need to fight against these poor restaurant hotel choices. We need to tell them it's not okay to have one single pack of tangy cheese Doritos and advertise it as a £7 order. We need to fight against those people. And when we start to win that fight, that is when we will take back what is... Let's make hotel room service great again!
All I will say is that you will win that fight, Kenny. I fully believe in you in that. And when it comes to food and your anger, I do believe in you. But I will also say that you will probably get herpes from eating the food that they give you as an apology. So there is a careful balance there. How much herpes do you want? How much food do you want? You may just have to bite the bullet and be the social justice warrior for the hotel room service scandal.
I'm cue all the messages now. Like, I can't believe that you turned away room service. I'm not fucking paid for that. I wouldn't have been able to sleep if I'd have known I'd paid for that. I don't earn a lot. Contrary to what people think, I don't earn a lot of money. Everything goes into the business. I've got to take my thrills when I can get them, and I'm not taking them to a single sale. Anyway, I'm not going to go into it.
I do have one other tale, sure, from Los Angeles.
Sure, sure. I feel like you need to bring it back to something realistic.
This is going to go delve into the supernatural, Kenny. Do you believe in ghosts, Kenny?
Yes. I've seen your sex life, so I fully believe in them.
Like Dan Aykroyd in Ghostbusters over here.
I love the idea that Val cosplays as Viggo in bed. I, Val, Scourge of St. Louis. Anyway, continue.
Oh my god. We stayed at a haunted hotel called the Biltmore in Los Angeles. That's like one of the oldest, or maybe the oldest, hotel in all of LA.
I'm Googling and right now, the Biltmore.
The Biltmore, yeah, it's where the Black Dahlia thing happens.
Oh, right. It literally said, if you type in the Biltmore and then Los Angeles, the first thing that comes up is haunted.
Yeah, and like it was where Ghostbusters was filmed.
Oh wow!
So yeah. The ballroom scene with Slimer and whatnot in the hotel.
Amazing.
Yeah, right. Yeah, really cool. So I don't believe in ghosts, right? So I just don't believe in afterlife.
You ain't afraid of no ghosts.
Not afraid of no ghost. Few of my colleagues were a little scared to be sleeping there. I was just like, motherfucker, I'm passing out. Give me that bed right now. I don't give a fuck. If there's ghosts having sex on my bed, like you could see the outline of the ghost having a romp, and I'd just be like, all right, bleh, and just fall straight on top of them. I do not care at that point. So nothing spooky had happened to anybody. But, you know, I always like asking, you know, just because it's fun. And so I wake up at 3:35 a.m. on my fourth night there in L.A.
Right.
And I wake up because a person's hand is on the back of my head.
Just fuck sort of off. Like,
I am not bullshitting you. I don't believe in this shit, so I have no reason to make this up. A person's hand is on the back of my head, and it's what wakes me up. I don't wake up and then feel it. Like, I feel it, and I'm like, oh, Val, knock it off. You know, I'm tired. I've only slept 2 hours. I'm tired. And
I love that. So, I love that you paint Val as a sex-crazed maniac. Get off me, Val. Come on.
No,
it's been
hours.
I just
thought she was fucking with me. Okay, right? Because okay. I'm sleeping on my stomach. I should preface that. And there is hand on the back of my head, right? Are you also a stomach sleeper, Kenny?
I am, yeah. 100%.
Ah, there you go. High five. Boom. Woo. I feel the hand on the back of my head wake me up. And so, like, about 5 seconds afterwards, I think, wait a minute, Val's not here. I'm in Los Angeles on business alone in this room. And so that dawns on me, like, 15 seconds after being awake, because I was in a deep sleep, you know? And so I'm just laying there, sort of scared shitless now. I think somebody's broken into my room. You know what I mean? And they're like fucking with me. Because it's not like aggressive, but there is a hand. I can feel the outline of the fingers on my hair. Because contrary to popular belief, where I'm balding is not the back of my head. I have hair back there. So I feel like the outline of the fingers, and there's a little bit of pressure, but not a lot. So it's not like just resting, but it's not trying to kill me either. It's like, you know, in between or whatever. And I just sit there for like a minute, and I'm in dead silence. I'm staring at my clock because that's the only thing I can see from the motion that I'm in, because I don't want to make a sudden movement in case there is someone in the room. You know, like I want to like have a game plan or something. You know what I mean? I don't want to just be like, and just start going ape shit, which would probably be the best game plan. That would probably scare the living shit out of whoever's trying to molest me,
yeah.
I guess. Right. So I'm sitting there, and like about a minute in, I'm thinking, okay, I'm wide awake. This is actually happening. I'm wide awake. I'm not dreaming. This isn't, you know, and my eyes are wide open. I'm thinking very clearly. I know where I am, etc. Because, you know, I'm like, I have to make sure I'm not dreaming this shit. In case whatever it is, you know, I have to make sure it's not a dream and it is reality. And so finally, about a minute and 15 seconds later, I guess, I don't know, it felt a lot longer, but that's my realism kicking in. I guess it was about a minute, a little over. I swipe the back of my head and like lounge to my front, basically. That way I would have both hands in front of me and I could deal with whoever is in there. I swipe my hand away. It all goes away. And the room gets really still and it's pitch black in there. There's no movement of feet. There's no one in there. Nothing. And it all goes away just in a flash, just like that. So.
Wow.
I don't believe in ghosts. I still don't believe in ghosts because I don't know what that was, what happened, but it was very much real. And I don't know. I can't explain it, I guess is the best way that I could possibly sum it up. But there is my quote unquote ghost story from the haunted Biltmore on the 8th floor. So
Jesus,
that's my ghost story. And it scared the living shit out of everybody that was staying at the hotel.
I always feel like people who don't believe in ghosts are people who have never experienced it. Like, I've never experienced it, but I'm not, like,
right,
really close to it. I think that there probably is some stuff. I don't believe that, like, ghosts come up to you and go, David, I am your old high school teacher, or anything like that. But
Right.
This was
something else. And, like, I don't believe in ghosts because I don't believe in an afterlife. And even if this was something that people would relate with a ghost, I still don't necessarily think that pegs it as a dead person communicating with you, right? Because I made a pact with my mom. I was like, Mom, whenever you die or if I die before you, we got to haunt the shit out of each other. And she was like, yeah, we're going to do that. And then I never got haunted by her. So I'm just saying, if it's dead people, I'm pissed at my mom.
Well, the thing is, like, your mom might be up in, like, heaven. Just like playing cards, like drinking whiskey or something, and like she's just having too good a time to come down and spend the effort to haunt you yet. Like maybe she's like, I'll give him 5 years. I'll come down later.
It could be, but like I mean, it could be some fucking parallel universe where somebody's interacting with something, and I don't know. Who knows? We don't have any science to prove all this shit one way or the other. The quote unquote ghost hunters science, which, you know, I said that with air quotations. that's my ghost story, everybody. There you go. I hope you enjoyed it.
There you go. We've had a...
Also, though, no hauntings afterwards. Like, I slept like a baby from then on the rest of the trip. So, isolated ghosting.
Isolated ghost stories here on Inside the Ropes. Look out for our After Dark spin-off show a la Brian Alvarez. Anyway, so obviously last week we didn't get to cover Raw because David was away and I'd just come back, but I just thought I'd very quickly go through some of the things from last week that I liked. The opening segment with Brock Lesnar, Paul Heyman and Samoa Joe was excellent. Seeing Brock Lesnar back was a big plus point, seeing him with the championship, and then you had Samoa Joe coming out, going face-to-face with Lesnar. I loved Samoa Joe headbutting Lesnar. And then them getting into the big fight together and all the guys trying to break them up. Like, it felt like Samoa Joe feels like a threat to Brock Lesnar. And I think that's the main thing you should be looking to do. So I thought it was a very effective segment. And I just grinned from ear to ear the whole time. Because seeing Samoa Joe and Brock Lesnar beat the shit out of each other on Monday Night Raw is exactly what I needed to see.
You know, one way that I think they could book Joe a little bit better, though, is like in every match, he has to win with nefarious means, and you would never see Brock doing that. You know what I mean? So I think like a better way to book him is to just keep him out of in-ring action until this match. Just have him deliver promos and vignettes and beatdowns and things like that, but never actually compete in a match. I think that would maybe.
Yeah, I also like the idea, like, if he's in a match, he doesn't actually care about winning, and he like gets himself disqualified by not letting go of holds and stuff. Like, he just doesn't care. Like, he, you know, when he needs to win, he will win. But apart from that, he just wants.
I'd rather see him win like that than nearly lose and then win via a distraction or something.
Yes. Which we will get to.
We will.
Now, Noam Dar last week I thought was very, very funny with the mobile phone thing with Alicia on it, and he's walking out, and she's like giving him a bit of trouble, and he's like, "I've got to have a match, Alicia. I've got to wrestle." And she just keeps giving him shit, and then the referee's like, "You need to put the phone down." And he's like, "Do you want to deal with this, Dafty?" It's very funny. Noam Dar is great. Little inside scoop. Apparently, Vince McMahon is a big fan of Noam Dar.
That's good.
And Vince McMahon has a Noam Dar impression that he does, which
really?
I pay money to listen to.
Oh my goodness.
I can only imagine Vince McMahon when Noam was doing Alicia Fox. Fantastic. And then the rest of Raw last week wasn't really too much to write home about, because obviously there was the NBA game, so they didn't really put a lot of hype into stuff. There was some stuff with Rollins and Wyatt that continued. There was some, you know, Titus brand stuff. And, you know, that kind of thing. But there wasn't really too much to write home about. The main event ended up being, the main event ended up being a tag, a best 2 out of 3 falls match for the tag titles, with Sheamus and Cesaro against the Hardys, which ended with a double count out in the third fall, which I understand the idea of, you know, it's a TV match and you want to just kind of, you know, you can kind of give away a finish like that. But I think that when you put it in the main event spot, I think people expect a little bit more from it. So,
right.
But I am intrigued by the fact that they are still protecting the Hardys. Still. At this point. They did the interview on, with Corey Graves right after Raw. Very good interview, worth checking out. It's about 15 minutes long, where they talk about, you know, they think the broken gimmick is going to come to WWE. Apparently, Jeff Hardy's middle name is Nero, so he now needs to be known as Brother, Nero, which is funny. So I think last week's Raw, just kind of very quickly, I would give it I'll give it a 5 out of 10. I think the Brock Lesnar Samoa Joe segment was so great, but the rest of the show was just kind of a bit there. So I think it would have been a below average show, but the Brock and Samoa Joe thing definitely picked it up. Very quickly though, before we go into talking about this show, I feel that just for a couple of minutes, you were at Money in the Bank, you were there live in St. Louis, Missouri. Give us some hot takes, because I know people want to hear what you've got to say, and I think we should give you the floor for just being there live, the experience, the highs, the lows, the dramas, the queefs, whatever happened.
It was a fun show, is how I would describe it. I'm kind of middling with it because all of the results were terrible. In terms of, I mean, hey, like Baron Corbin and Carmella deserve the briefcases. They'll do well with it.
Part of the problem that Money in the Bank as a briefcase fits heels more? Is that part of the issue, do you think, that they kind of...
You had gender going into it,
and gender was obviously going to retain, so you basically, your top three matches that are going to have all heels coming out of it, was that maybe like a problematic way to formulate it?
I thought for certain that a babyface would walk out with the men's Money in the Bank after they put Orton, and on a high note, send the crowd home happy, one of those things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And because I was like, you know, there's no reason to put the placement of these matches, because you can say what you want to about Mahal and Orton, but it probably should have gone on last in St. Louis, Randy Orton's hometown, because regardless of how bad that is, St. Louis is known for two things. Racist xenophobia, we're very prominent with that, especially in our police force. And the other thing that they're known for is loving Randy Orton, because he's from here. So the crowd, regardless of how it would have been perceived on television, the crowd would have been really hot for it. So I think just having a night of downers, it's weird. I feel like the WWE has kind of forgotten how to make fans happy, just in general. The last time where they really built something for a good feel-good moment, from front to back, was Daniel Bryan. They tried to with Rollins, but he wasn't really connecting until like the last 3 weeks of his Triple H feud, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So like with that, it was sort of haphazardly put together, like a weird Frankenstein. As to where the Daniel Bryan thing, that was from front to back, that was really good. And it wasn't anything that they planned. They deserve way less credit than they get on that.
Has there ever been anything in the history of WWE that looks more deliberate that wasn't than that storyline?
Right. If Punk didn't walk, Daniel Bryan would have never had that spot. Let's be perfectly honest. So that you can thank CM Punk for that. But like, would it really have killed them to give Sammy or Nakamura or AJ that briefcase?
See, I think AJ or Sammy, you could do it. Somebody made a great point in our Facebook community about it would be very funny to see Sammy every week, like, you know, anxiously, you know, weighing up the pros and cons of cashing in.
Right.
That'd be funny. I think Nakamura would have been death to him to give him the briefcase for his character. But the other two, I think, could have worked.
I think he could have pulled it off in a weird way, actually, but we'll never know. So,
you were of all the moments for you to be on camera, Sami Zayn's entrance.
Ah, it was perfect, wasn't it? My favorite wrestler, right?
When did you find out that was the
midway through the match, because I wasn't looking at my phone. I got my phone out to take some pictures, and then I noticed that I had like 85 notifications on Twitter, and, you know, because I had just looked at it, you know, during the entrances. Like, whenever Ziggler came out, I looked at my phone. So to go from zero notifications to 80 in that amount of time, yeah, I knew. And also, my boss from E3, actually, he texted me, and he goes, "Dude, you're on TV." I was like, "Really?" Mm-hmm. Like, so the text messages and the tweets gave it away midway through the match. But yeah, that was awesome. The reason that we were on TV is I lost my shit whenever his music played. So I'm pretty sure you could audibly hear me screaming, "Yeah!" over his music, and that probably got someone's attention. So that's probably why we were on the telly. But yeah, the ladder match was great. The crowd was excellent. I don't know if it appeared that way on TV, but man, that was a hot crowd, man.
I thought they were good. I watched the show live with Miles. You remember from
sure.
that? And we had a really good time watching the show. You know, he was also filming reactions on it on a camera, which I was not expecting. So I was trying to be aware that there's a camera there, so I wasn't saying too many inflammatory things. but like, you know, at the end of it, I enjoyed watching the show. You know, I enjoyed.
Yeah.
And I think at the end of it, like with the Baron Corbin thing, like I'm not gonna lie and be like, "David, I'm really excited that Baron Corbin's got the briefcase." It's not that I am. I get it.
It fits his character.
Like it's fine. I think that was it was fine, but I think it was a fun show overall. I think that it was well. Watching it at home, it didn't feel like it was long. It didn't feel like it dragged too much.
No, it didn't in person either. How loud were the AJ Styles Nakamura chants?
Oh, huge. Huge.
Yeah.
Huge
and,
chants.
And if they can get over in the middle of the country, that wasn't a Chicago crowd. By the way, we were much better than the last Chicago crowd, so fuck you, Chicago. We did it. That wasn't a Chicago crowd. It wasn't a Philly crowd. It wasn't a New York crowd. It wasn't an LA crowd. That was just your standard run-of-the-mill, middle-of-America crowd, and they were eating up Nakamura and AJ Styles. That's all I'm going to say about it, man, because I'm telling you. But if I were booking that, Val made a great point. She would have had Sami Zayn win the briefcase, and then you have the conundrum of whenever Baron Corbin eventually won the title – then Sami Zayn, who Baron Corbin cannot defeat, would be the guy who was challenging him with that briefcase on a weekly basis, teasing it, getting into his mind, playing head games. Baron Corbin can't beat Sami Zayn, and Sami Zayn's the one who has the briefcase that cash in to his title. I think that would have been a much better story.
It's a good story, but I think a better story would be let's find a jobber who's very average. We'll get one from maybe like Canada or something, and
sure,
then we'll like
yeah, yeah.
We'll make
a guy that we released because he was so bad.
We'll make him like Indian because he's got like Indian grandparents, and then
sure.
We'll like give him the title in a month.
To
be fair, I thought Jinder did a decent job. I don't advocate that he should be champion for much longer, but I thought he did some decent heel work with the stuff he was doing with Legends. They helped him out, I think.
If you want my honest opinion, and you can say this makes you a terrible fan, whatever, I don't really care what people think. The second that those two came out, and I can pay attention during a Randy Orton match, and I can pay attention during a Jinder Mahal match, you put the two of them together, I can't pay attention to it. It's like a Yankees-Red Sox game. I have no interest. So those two together, I was like, piss break, immediately went up, gotta piss.
Well, that would be, I would choose that as my piss break. Buy my alcohol, buy a hot dog. I would do everything. I'd go to the merch stand. I'd do everything.
Yeah, no. I did. And then I left my fucking merch bag at the place, so I lost my merchandise.
David.
I know, right? So terrible. And then went and got Val a drink, checked out the merch, bought a AJ Styles Funko Pop, which is now missing. came back to my seat and caught him destroying the Singh brothers. So, and I didn't even like, I saw the finish. I didn't even stand up for it. I just watched it on the monitor. Didn't care, man. I hate to be that fan and be that obnoxious, but if you don't care, you don't care. I'm not going to lie about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I think like, you know, they did pretty much the same finish as last month. And, I mean, I think that the hometown thing and the Legends added a couple of cool elements that made it more bearable.
But, yeah, and the Legends thing was cool. I watched all of that before I got up, you know. So
I think that's the biggest pop that Cowboy Bob Orton's got in his career.
Yeah, probably. No.
Ever since he gave Pepsi to The Undertaker in 2005.
every time Val sees him, she always goes, better tell The Undertaker to watch out. Bob Orton's in the house.
So just for anyone who doesn't know, in 2005, Undertaker was feuding with Randy Orton. Randy Orton was a legend killer, and they were doing all these storylines, and eventually Bob Orton came in and like attacked The Undertaker, and he became like Randy Orton's manager for a little while. And I can't remember, you might remember the specifics, David, I don't, but...
I don't know. I wasn't even watching then, but I heard about it.
There was like a match or something where like Bob Orton got color. He bled. And Undertaker ended up, I think he had a bit of it in his hand or his arm or something. And then like after the match, it was revealed that Bob Orton actually had Hep C at the time. And Undertaker was fucking raging, as he should be at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, that's...
I don't like it when somebody coughs on me, never mind anything else.
Right. Yeah, no, it's that's really rough.
So there you go. But yes, I mean, I guess just very quickly, because we don't obviously have time to go into all of it. We gave our thumbs on it. What would your out of 10 rating be of Money in the Bank?
Out of 10, I really like the wrestling on the show. I thought that the men's Money in the Bank match was just phenomenal. It was really great. But like, yeah, there's certain portions of it to where it was like, man, oh man. I think I would give it a 6 out of 10, which is too low for my favorite pay-per-view of the year. Live though, it was a fun little, deal. I enjoyed it a whole lot. So, yeah. I thought that it could have been a little bit better. I really loved the tag match though for the titles. That was really good.
Yeah.
The Usos got, I don't know if it was audible, but people like the Usos, man. Those were two babyface tag teams that were teaming up.
Well, they don't really do any heel stuff. They're just the Usos.
A lot of people were pissed about the finish, but them doing that kind of helped make them heels a bit. You know what I mean?
Yep. 100%. Let's get on to Raw in Evansville, Indiana. The current hometown of Vince Russo. And we got Roman Reigns coming out to open up the show. He's got an announcement about SummerSlam. He comes out. Now, I don't care what anybody says. He cuts a fucking heel promo of all the heel promos. He talks about, you know, some of you might like this, some of you might not, but there's no one that can beat me one-on-one. Asprey Wyatt, yeah. Finn Balor, Seth Rollins, Braun Strowman. He put Strowman out of commission. He main evented 3 WrestleManias in a row. He retired The Undertaker. I respect him. He respects me because I beat him. You know, he basically said that he wants the winner of Lesnar and Joe from Great Balls of Fire at SummerSlam. And, he said, you know, he's gonna, He doesn't care who it is, if it's Lesnar or that guy they called Joe. He's going to be the guy to take the title. And then he said, you want to know why? Because this is my yard and I make the rules around here. Great heel promo. Great heel promo.
Yeah, if only he were a heel, that would be great.
From babyface Roman Reigns. And then out comes Samoa Joe. Joe comes out. They kind of have a back and forth. Reigns says that he's just Joe. Cube, you know, Andy who watched in 2000, the jobber, just Joe. Samoa Joe headbutts Roman Reigns, knocks him to the outside.
It was a hell of a headbutt, too.
Oh, it was great. I think that's now the thing. Whenever somebody pisses off Samoa Joe, you want to see the headbutt.
They
kind of have a back and forth. You know, Reigns hits a Superman punch, so Joe kind of retreats to the outside. And sort of, what I liked about it was, like, all he did was kind of sell, that kind of hurt my jaw a little bit. That's it. That's all it did. I thought it was a hot opening segment, and the crowd ate it up.
Yeah. Yeah, no, so. I love Joe, man. Joe's awesome. And for anyone wondering, in person, the coolest motherfucker on the planet. Samoa Joe all the way. Big fan. Love him.
I'm going to ask you a question, folks. Send your answers on Twitter. What subject did Samoa Joe and David J. McCutcheon discuss at length? A. Nintendo games of the 1980s. B. Old school wrestling from St. Louis. Or C. Gangster rap. Send your answers on Twitter. David will follow the winner.
Sure, I'll do it. But it's only got to be one winner. So
you can pick the first one to get it right.
First one to get it right will get a follow from me. How about that?
There you go. So yeah, the opening segment was pretty decent. We then get Matt and Jeff against Gallows and Anderson. Match goes about 10 minutes. Pretty decent, you know. Sadly, Gallows and Anderson don't really mean much on Raw, so it didn't really have the fire that this would have had maybe a year ago.
Gallows pissed about this. She was like, Gallows and Anderson are fucking cheating and they're still losing? What the fuck? They jobbed them out. She was furious about it. Yeah.
I love that when Val is furious, facially she remains pretty much the same. Do you know what I mean? Like,
she no-sells it.
She no-sells it, but she still acts enraged. It's great.
Yeah. On the outside, she's no-selling it, and on the inside, she's just a ball of rage. It's wonderful.
So the Hardys get the win, so there you go. Just a kind of a win to keep going. The Hardys, again, you know, vying for the tag team titles from Sheamus and Cesaro. Any thoughts on the match?
It was your standard fare. I don't have much to say about it, in all honesty.
We then got a Shattered Dreams production video. Jamie Domican actually tweeted me and said, he bet that the Sunset Boulevard quote popped me. It absolutely did. I love the old school movie references, whether it's Psycho or Sunset Boulevard or whatever. And he basically said he's going to be flying into the City of Angels on wings made of gold next week. And he invites R-Truth to the debut of his latest picture, The Shattered Truth. Goldust is fucking great.
Goldust is amazing, but this, I'm hoping that next week things take it up to another level. Because right now it's excellent, but it's like, all right, I'm ready for the next act of this, the next portion of this act.
We're going to get next week. We're getting The Shattered Truth.
I hope so. I'm excited for it, actually.
Elias Samson comes out to play his guitar, did his usual shtick. And then, as he was strumming his guitar to tune it, we had Finn Balor come in and interrupt. Balor ends up getting in the ring, going face-to-face with Elias Samson, who sort of backs away. Which, later on, Elias Samson would attack Finn Balor. Finn Balor defeats Bo Dallas here in a pretty quick match. So I guess Finn Balor's next program is with The Drifter.
Can you imagine in NXT... with the Drifter and NXT champion Finn Balor.
I love the idea. I love the idea more. It's like when you know. Listen, Fergal, you're in the Bullet Club, mate, right? You're headlining the Tokyo Dome in Japan. If you come here, we can put you on Raw against a fucking Drifter. Money.
What?
Money.
Print that fucking money. Print it. Fucking eat the money. Eat it because it's delicious. This shit is just what you are wanting,
delicious
motherfuckers.
Money.
I can't even, Kenny. I don't even know what to say. Like, what do you say about this?
Well, yeah, it's funny, like, because when I was watching Money in the Bank on Sunday night, Miles kept asking me, and this is, like, on camera, so he's, like, looking for some good shit for his channel, and I've just got nothing. And he's like, who's going to win this? And I'm like, ever since gender won, I can't predict anything. Like, if gender wins, anybody has a chance in any situation.
Yeah, like for real, it is, and maybe that's a good thing, maybe
no,
it's a bad thing, but it is a thing.
It is a thing, but it's like people go, well, anything can happen. Yeah, I could get shot in the face. I'm not going to like it. All joking aside, I get it. Finn Balor is, you know, he's obviously in line at some point to go against Lesnar. I'm okay with him kind of just beating up a drifter. It's fine. It's not exciting. I think I would prefer something that kind of gave him a little bit more character. What I will say I do like is that, imagine, right, if like we get to the Finn and Brock stage, right, and say it's like, say it's Survivor Series, let's just say that.
Sure.
It's a Survivor Series, and Finn Balor does the exact same stuff he's doing right now. He just beats guys up, has the kind of Fonzie from Happy Days jacket and all that, and he does the build-up to Survivor Series, and on the night, he returns as the Demon to take on the Beast. Like, that would be so cool to see him just, like, in that gear, on another level, trying to take out Brock.
Well, I mean, the natural progression is Drifter to Beast, so...
I mean, that's how we all advanced from high school to college.
Right.
We drifted,
I mean,
then we
slept with
the Beast, and then we got leave of our senses. Standard story.
Fucking hell. No, I think you're wrong, though. I think he's going to debut the Demon against the Drifter on Raw.
Oh,
that's what's going to happen, Kenny. Get ready for it. Prepare.
I will be... If you thought the rant on Jinder fucking Mahal was bad... If he unveils the fucking Demon against that fucking sack of shit, I will... Oh, no, no way. No, no.
And then he's going to... The Drifter's going to sing a song about demons.
Fucking shove his guitar up his ass. Cody Graves ends up leaving the booth shortly afterwards, so obviously the thing with him and Kurt Angle is still going on. We find out that Seth Rollins is the cover guy for the WWE 2K18 video game. We see a very cool video of him destroying a bunch of vintage WWE items. Very cool video, and I'm happy for him on the cover.
Yeah, kind of a fun thing. Whenever my work life interferes with my fun life, that's always kind of fun. Getting a little chocolate in my peanut butter and whatnot.
Yeah.
The trailer's cool, but like, it's basically like, become your own person. Don't do anything that anyone else has done. Be an arsonist. And I'm like, oh, that escalated. What the fuck?
I did take umbrage to one thing, right? So Seth Rollins.
Well, I think we both took umbrage to the same thing.
And I got retweeted by the man himself on this.
Oh, did you really?
So. You can go in and you can throw the Undertaker's fucking hat and jacket off a cliff like you did. Fuck the Undertaker. Fuck that guy.
Yeah, fuck that shit.
Oh, Mick Foley. Oh, I've only got half an ear. Aye, fuck off. You made loads of money. Go fuck yourself. But if you dare take a hammer to the shears of Brutus the Barber Beefcake, you and I are going to have a problem. How dare you, sir? And I tweeted it out, and Brutus Beefcake retweeted me because Brutus Beefcake knows what's going on, and he knows exactly how to keep himself relevant.
He does. He does. He's a good man. He's a good man, that Brutus Beefcake.
Yeah. Trivia fact: did you know that Brutus Beefcake now has both of his nipples pierced?
Oh, that's going to be what they replace in that WWE archives. It's going to be his nipple rings.
I do think that it's always good when your tits get a little bit bigger in your 50s to add jewelry to it. It's always a good move.
I will duly note that. If I live to my 50s, Kenny, just for you.
God, you'll live to your 80s and I'll never hear the end of it. Anyway, Kurt Angle's on the phone talking about Money in the Bank being crazy. Corey Graves comes in and, you know, Kurt says he didn't have a good Father's Day because he received the same text that Corey did. Enzo and Cass showed up. Kurt asked Enzo why he sent a tweet like that to Conor McGregor. And Enzo says he stepped over bigger guys than Conor. And basically, they want to know who attacked them. And Kurt Angle promised that by the end... Now, remember this, folks. Kurt Angle promised that they would find out who had attacked them by the end of the night. That was the message.
Oh, man.
We'll come back
Scooby-Doo on the case. All it took to solve this fucking month-long mystery was for Kurt Angle to put his head together for, like, an hour.
Well, that's the theory. Seth Rollins comes out, he talks about being in the video game, he talks about, you know, the success he's had, and the second chance the fans have given him, and this is our cover, and all that sort of stuff. Bray Wyatt interrupts, talks about, you know, Rollins has grown as an individual, but he, you know, he's his own man, but he shills the corporate banner. Wyatt struggles, says that he feels there's like a struggle that Seth's got, and they kind of go back and forth, and Wyatt then makes his entrance, which Tom Cliff on our Facebook community did make a great point of, how does he blow the lantern out and then it's on straight away when he comes out?
That's great.
It reminds me of in like 1993 when in Fresh Prince they had a power cut and then Phil put on the stereo. You know. Because, you know, entertainment. So Wyatt ends up coming out. Rollins leaps off the top rope onto the floor at him, and Wyatt's left laying. It was a decent angle. I don't think it was blow away, but it was decent. It was fine.
I like the fucking heel turn by Rollins on this. He went out and said that gods are make believe.
You don't say that in America.
Yeah, exactly. People were booing that shit. That was great, though. Babyface turn for me. Little atheist me over here. Not ghost-believing motherfucker right here.
Look where that got you. Fucking getting fucking Baron von Raschke's claw on your head in a hotel room.
Oh, by the way, before whenever they first showed Baron on the big screen, I call one of my cats Baron von Raschke. So I am a fan of the Baron. Whenever they showed him on the screen, I started doing the claw. And this woman behind me was like, what the fuck's he doing? Like, she turned and then, like, I guess she thought I had, like, a cramp in my wrist or something.
Of course.
It's hard being a real wrestling fan in this menagerie of idiots, Kenny. Come on.
Yeah. You're keeping the dream alive.
I am. Just not the American dream. He's dead.
I mean, that's awkward. You've just made that awkward. So we then saw Finn Balor being attacked by the Drifter, saying, don't you ever upstage me again, to which I cackled at the idea that, you know,
just Finn Balor,
the first ever Universal Champion, upstaged the Drifter jobber.
the Drifter jobber.
So,
don't you mean the next Universal Champion, Kenny, once he beats Finn Balor and goes on to face Brock Lesnar?
Why can't he just drift? Just drift.
he was so much better whenever he was just drifting everywhere.
The blue ropes came, which obviously meant that it was a cue for everyone in the building to go for a shit.
Yeah.
We got Akira Tozawa against TJP, but just as it was about to begin, Titus O'Neil came out and said they couldn't have a match of this magnitude without the proper hype. He said that this match was presented by 205 Live in conjunction with the Titus brand, which I didn't know I didn't realize there was a way to devalue this further. But adding the Titus brand seemed to do it.
I had somebody on Twitter, and it's somebody I really like and respect, so I'm not going to call him out. But I am going to make fun of him. He tweeted me, and whenever I said the WWE, I don't think they know how to make fans truly happy anymore by giving them an outcome that they like. And he's all like, buddy, there's plenty to like about the WWE. 205 Live is great.
Wow.
And that
listen,
was genuine.
Listen, if you watch 205 Live and you think it's great, wait till you fucking watch Raw, you'll have an orgasm. Stuff happens.
I know. Stars. Just, my God, can you believe it? Oh man. That is his opinion. He is allowed to it. I'm happy that whatever makes people happy. I love that. That's great. I'm all for it. But come on.
I love that you were setting up, and I knew you were basically going to say you could totally have whatever opinion you want, and I respect that. But come on,
to compare 205 Live on a weekly basis to Daniel Bryan's Yes Movement run. Come on.
I mean, I don't know if that's what he was comparing it to, but.
Come the fuck on, right? Like, seriously.
But yeah. Akira Tozawa does get the victory over TJP, and Titus then raises Tozawa's hand, talks about, you know, the fans should give it up for him. Then the Titus brand are going to have an even bigger night as they're going to face the tag champs. Neville interrupted, referred to Titus as a peasant, and told Akira to be careful what he wished for, because he wouldn't get an opportunity to... face Neville. Titus called him a little boy, and that he would be annihilated by the power of Tozawa.
I kind of like it in a
way. I love Titus. I fucking love him. He's so crap. Like, he's so crap that I like him. And obviously, Akira and Tozawa are my favorite tag team, so, you know, it works for me.
5 years ago, if the Jinder Mahal rule would have been in effect, Titus O'Neil would be world champion, Kenny.
What a thought.
What a thought, yeah. I mean, like, if you think about it, why not, right? Like, why not? They are both the same wrestler in the ring, but Titus O'Neil has a better personality. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm saying, you guys. Titus O'Neil, Universal Champion 2018. It's happening. Book it here. Put all your money in your savings account on it. I guarantee it.
We also had a segment with The Miz. The Miz obviously, no, that's not yet. Sorry. I'm mixing my stuff up.
Slow down.
We're up next. We get R-Truth, doing a little quote from Batman. He accepts Goldust's invitation to the Shattered Truth next week, and Goldust would get got. I kind of hope Goldust, like, beats him quite quickly and moves on, but I feel like that's probably not going to happen.
I feel like this is going to be a program that goes on for a while, unfortunately.
Backstage, we got Curtis Axel telling Bo Dallas that he believed in him, social outcasts still stick together. The Miz came in and said that he was sorry to interrupt them and that, you know, they were all in the Marine 5. I was going to say Maroon 5, they were not in the band.
They will be loved, though. Kenny.
They will. The Miz basically said that they should join his entourage and he would make them stars. Which, to be fair, if anything can make you a star, it's probably The Miz.
Yeah, I mean, he is the miracle worker, man.
So up next, it is Samoa Joe and Roman Reigns. Got a promo from Joe before the match. But the match was very good. You know, they work well together. But obviously, there is one thing that stands heads and shoulders above the rest of this match. We have Roman Reigns setting up for a spear when all of a sudden the sound of an ambulance hits. And we cut backstage to an ambulance rearing its way into the arena. And as the doors smash open, we have Braun Strowman in gear just shouting, in one of my favorite scenes of all time. Where it appears that he has just been in an ambulance for the last 2 months, and he's now fully healed, and he's back.
He didn't even receive medical treatment. He's just been sitting there fuming in the ambulance.
The sling is just sitting in the ambulance. He's just taken off half an hour ago. So he comes out as he's sort of coming out. That sort of distracts Roman. Joe applies the Kikina clutch and gets the win. So Joe's victorious. But then Braun Strowman comes out, tells Roman he's not finished with him, beats the piss out of him, choke slams him. The fans chat one more time, and then Strowman says he wants Roman the Great Balls of Fire in an ambulance match, and Braun Strowman is back. What are your thoughts, David?
Oh, man. Whenever Braun Strowman does anything, like, you know how a baby is if you hold up keys and jingle them, how the baby's just giggly and excited constantly? That's me with Braun Strowman. Like, Braun Strowman can fucking do, like, he busts through there and went, "Boo!" And I just started laughing hysterically for like 5 minutes straight, unable to control myself. Like, he cracks me up. I love Braun Strowman.
Who would have thought a year ago that we'd feel this way about Braun Strowman?
Just, like, unabashedly in love with the fucking guy, right? Like,
he's been missed.
Very, very much so. Like, with a roster that has the likes of Finn Balor on there and Samoa Joe and captivating personalities like Roman Reigns, who would have thought? I'm happy that popped you. Who would have thought, though, that fucking Braun Strowman would be the guy that we go, "Man, I'm so happy he's back." Like,
anyone who ever tells me that the brand split did not work, he is one of the people I would point to and go, "Sorry, that man says otherwise."
Yeah. Oh, man.
I almost take the decimation of tag team wrestling just to get Braun Strowman. And I think him and Roman will have a good match in the ambulance match. They work well together, so I'm pretty... Do you know what? As a double main, Reigns, Strowman, and Joe Lesnar is not a bad double main for the pay-per-view.
No, you could do a whole lot worse, and I'm excited to watch my man ascend to the crown by absolutely killing and or destroying Roman Reigns at the Great Balls of Fire pay-per-view. Which, by the way, how great is it that they have to say the Great Balls of Fire pay-per-view instead of just saying Great Balls of Fire?
Well, you know, if he was to come out and say, "I challenge you to an ambulance match at Great Balls of Fire," nobody would know what he means.
Yeah, so
you have to say the Great Balls of Fire pay-per-view, because then you know exactly what it is. Did you hear the story about Jerry Lee Lewis? Did you hear about this?
No.
So, Jerry Lee Lewis apparently heard from somewhere that WWE were calling the pay-per-view Great Balls of Fire. So he got in touch with his lawyers and was like, "Do we need to speak to these guys?" And then, like, Jerry Lee Lewis was like, "Let them have the song. Let them use the song."
Seriously?
Yeah, so now they get to use the song.
Wow. That is nuts. Like, what? He just gave it to them?
I mean, I'm sure they paid something for it, but, like, I'm sure it's, like, a good rate or something.
Right,
but he apparently got a kick out of it, so...
Wow.
There you go.
That's nuts. Man, oh man.
So yeah, no, I'm happy Joe got the win, I'm happy that Strowman's back. Yeah, good times ahead. We then get The Miz coming out for a Miz TV, he tries to apologize to Maryse, he's got big bears in the ring, holding up "I'm sorry" and "forgive me" signs. Maryse is like refusing to kiss him. He's made up the grandfather clock. He said that, you know, "Sorry isn't good enough," and you know, he wanted to put this grandfather clock back together with glue and polish and YouTube videos, and that it was perfect just like her. And she was about to accept the apology when Dean Ambrose comes out, that bastard. Miz then pulls Maryse in the way, causing her to spill the champagne all over herself that he'd poured, because he got her favorite champagne. Miz apologized, but she was still angry. And then Miz ended up charging after Ambrose, who moved out of the way, and Miz fell into the grandfather clock and smashed it. Maryse slapped the Miz and left, and Ambrose clotheslined Miz over the top rope, but then the Bears attacked Ambrose, and they were Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel. So Miz appears to have Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel with him, and Maryse appears to be out of the picture. In the worst trade I've ever seen in my life. This is like the time in 2004 where legit, this happened on Raw. So Eric Bischoff was the general manager of Raw, and I think Paul Heyman was the general manager of SmackDown, and it was the draft, and Triple H, it was like the middle of his like reign of doom, and Triple H got drafted to SmackDown. And it was like, you know, "Oh my God, he's been drafted to SmackDown, blah, 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 blah." And Eric Bischoff was so determined to get him back, that he traded Booker T and the Dudleys to get Triple H back. I mean, this is not the same thing, but it's equally as ridiculous.
Yeah, like, I was gonna say
Maryse is so good with the Miz.
She's the entire reason that Miz had this resurgence, right?
Oh, like, why do we need to now have Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel instead?
Why not just put Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel in the new Wyatt family or something? Like,
just anything.
That would make more sense, right?
It's like if it's my cheat day and I go, okay, I wanna order a cheeseburger, and I go, oh, give me a cheeseburger. Maurice is the cheeseburger, by the way. And then it arrives, and I open it up, and it's just a tortilla wrap with salad, cream, and lettuce.
Or Kenny, can I say something?
Sure.
It's sort of like whenever you order nachos for room service. And they just open up a little fucking single packet of Doritos and throw some shredded cheese that they didn't mind melt.
Smallest pack in the world.
They ate half of the Doritos out of the bag before they did it. And then they just fucking find the crumbs of cheese at a Mexican restaurant and fucking chuck those into the thing from the floor.
Listen to your Uncle David. He knows what he's talking about. He's speaking nothing but truth.
Oh man, that's a little creepy, Uncle.
Well, don't make it creepy. Oh God.
It's like the great Patton Oswalt joke, Uncle Touchy's Puzzle Basement. That's what I always think of whenever I think a balding man as your uncle.
So after that brief pedo alert, of David James,
I'm not knocking on doors just yet, ladies and gentlemen. No. God, come on.
So anyway, the Miz appears to now have Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas and not Maurice. I'm very unhappy about it. I'm really hoping it's just a temporary thing and we get Maurice back soon. Please come back, Maurice. Please.
I hope so. I will say, though, Val, as someone who hates the Miz, was eating this up. She's like, yes, his marriage is in shambles. she was so excited about it. So I actually do think that aspect of it is kind of fun, but yeah, come on, bring Maurice back. We don't want Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas.
We then get
Hold on though. Do you think they're going to be dressed as the Bears week in and week out, wrestling as the Bears?
No, surely not.
I'm making a prediction that they will be.
I think this is going to be like a really shitty version of that TV show Entourage. But they're going to be slightly less unlikable than the cast of Entourage.
I was going to say, you say shitty version of that, but isn't that already shitty?
Yeah, that's how bad Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel are.
Fair enough.
So then we got Sheamus and Cesaro beating Titus O'Neil and Apollo Crews in like a 5-minute match. It was fine. It was cool.
Yeah, it was what it was. It was one of those things to where they're just filling time.
Then we got an excellent video package on Brock Lesnar and Samoa Joe, focused on Samoa Joe dominating all of his opponents, and then talking about Lesnar and how, you know, he mocks the idea of being afraid of Samoa Joe because he put his hands on Paul Heyman. Really great stuff, and then it kind of plays into the fact that Brock Lesnar will be in Los Angeles next week.
Yep. Going to see some fireworks, you guys. Going to be very exciting.
We got Sasha Banks versus Nia Jax. Michael Cole in commentary at one point said that we would see a table for three with Maryse, Kelly, and Eve Torres. He said that Kelly is one of the greatest women's champions of all time, and I stand by my statement on Twitter. That is as similar as saying that Hitler was one of the biggest humanitarians in history. They both are as absurd as the other. She is dog shit in the ring. She is one of the most atrocious female performers I have ever seen in my life.
Oh Lord. I don't know if I can handle this. Oh my God.
Whenever they showed
that package, my wife goes, I'd rather gouge my fucking eyes out than watch that.
I'm with Val.
I watch every table for three, but I'll say this. I'm going to have to be really bored to watch that one.
I would have watched it with Eve Torres and Maurice.
Yeah.
But that fucking bland piece of shit. Nah, you're alright. Instead, I'll just go and take a really nice 15-minute shit sometime. You know, one of those nice leisurely ones where you read a bit of a book?
And
you
just, sure,
you
yeah.
Just enjoy yourself? One of those.
Good old book readings. Sure.
Sasha Banks took on Nia Jax, but then Alexa Bliss was on commentary. Emma came up to her. Alexa Bliss shoved her and then ran to the ring. Nia Jax caught Alexa Bliss and held her for Emma, and then Emma tried to kick her, and then it descended, and then Alexa Bliss took down Sasha, and then Dana Brooke and Mickie James ran in, and it kind of all went a bit tits up, and then Bayley's music came on, she came out, and in the end, we had... you know, Dana Brooke, Mickie James, and Bayley standing tall at the end. So, any thoughts on any of this?
Women's wrestling in WWE is terrible right now. That's my thoughts. Just overall, both brands, we need Asuka right now on the main roster to go through both rosters, actually. That would be great. Just have her win both titles, and they're like, hey, wait a minute. You have to pick a brand, and she's just like, no, fuck you, I'll do whatever I want. And just have her roll over everybody, take both titles, and never lose them for 5 years. That's what needs to happen,
like,
I guess.
I still think that, like, Becky Lynch and Charlotte are pretty decent on SmackDown, but, like...
Right, they're doing with them? Fuck.
But on Raw, I mean, I think Raw's worse for me.
Raw is worse, but,
I
like...
Mean, Sasha Banks, what's going on? Like, I mean, I just was watching this segment and I was going, I don't really buy any of the story that's going on. This needs some sort of like a jolt of electricity to it.
It's bad, man. It's really, really bad. Do you remember, Kenny, about 6 months ago when everybody was whining and complaining? Sasha and Charlotte are having another 4-star match. Wah! I want something different. Well, guess what, motherfuckers? You got something different.
Touché.
You idiots. You're dumb. This is why we're smarter.
Main event time. Kurt Angle comes out. He would not let Raw devolve and risk injury. He promised earlier he would find out who... attacked Enzo and Cass. He brings out Enzo and Cass. They do their routine, and Angle said he's spoken with suspects all night long. He brings out the Revival. He brings out Big Show. He then said that he asked Big Show, he said, you know, was this you? And Big Show took offense. He was like, I can't believe you're going to question me. Clearly forgetting his 47 million heel turns.
I wonder, actually, if he's turned babyface and heel more than anyone in history.
I checked it once. He has.
Okay. I would assume that. But,
the only
person
that comes close to him is Kane.
Okay. But, that's interesting. Yeah. That wouldn't have been... but I guess, yeah. Yeah.
Big Show basically threatened to leave Raw. Good. Go.
Tuesdays. Will be in like 9 months. So,
don't come to Tuesdays. We don't need you there. We're good. We're still looking for Ty Dillinger, Luke Harper, and American Alpha. Thanks.
Yeah, that ain't no shit. Jesus.
So then he talks to the Revival, and they talk to him, you know, they're innocent this time. And he said, well, you know, you guys do have solid alibis. And then my favorite thing. So, what did Kurt Angle say earlier on in the locker room to Enzo and Cass? What did he say about something about the end of the night?
That he would have an answer by the end of the night.
Right. So once this was finished, as Cody Graves was about to stand up, Kurt Angle was like, well, I guess I need to keep investigating. You were going to tell us! You said we were going to find out, and now you're like, oh, well, I guess next week maybe we need to find out in Los Angeles. Like, and then Cody Graves steps up to the bat like a champ, and he says, you know, that he needs to show some footage that's going to, you know, clear things up, and it's Cass setting up the scene for his attack and then lying down. And Graves said, "Did you attack Enzo?" And then Cass says, "You're damn right I did." He cuts a promo, which was very good, on Enzo, where he talks about, you know, you called it Conor McGregor, nobody likes you backstage, which is a very meta thing to talk about.
Yes.
Talks about, you know, it felt damn good when he attacked him. He wants to see Enzo suffer. He's never won a title in WWE because of Enzo. He wanted to see how smart Enzo was, if he would figure it out, but he was just as dumb as he looks, even dumber. He's dead weight, blah, 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 blah. And Cass says he's the future. And he says that Enzo's mouth writes checks that his ass can't cash. Cass has always been behind him, but not for long. You and me are through. Kicks him in the head, says, "You can't teach that," and walks off. This was the performance of Cass's career. Well done, that man.
This was the performance of both of their careers.
Do you get the absolute beautiful, subtle thing that happened?
Regarding...
Corey Graves on week one said on commentary, "I'd love to shake the hand
shake
of
the
man
hand
who did
of
that."
The man.
And the next
yes.
week, Big Cass shook his hand. Big Cass fucked with him weeks
yep.
ago.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Just planting the seeds, man. No, I love that. Something else that I love before we get into the meat and potatoes of this. I love Corey Graves having all of the knowledge in the world and the upper hand and being the smartest guy in the room. I think that that is a very interesting variable.
Well, also, given the fact that he's sitting beside the dumbest man alive, Booker T.
Right, right. But, like, man, that makes him one of the most interesting characters in WWE. And he's a commentator, you know? And I like that he's being utilized in this capacity because he's very, very, very good.
But you know what it does? You know? It gives the audience trust in him. And it
yeah.
gives him, it means that people look to him for...
He's a heel with credibility.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He's not even fully a heel. You know, he's kind of that, you know, he has
tweener,
a
heelish.
Tweener guy.
Leaning heel tweener.
Wait, very quickly, I forgot to say this on the Money in the Bank thing. So Booker T, who was absolutely atrocious in the kickoff show, right? He's sitting there telling Naomi, "Oh, you need to have a plan, you need to have a plan. Mate, what was your plan when Triple H pedigreed you and you lay there for 45 seconds before you get pinned at WrestleMania? Fuck off." My God.
Oh,
Booker
my
T,
goodness.
So terrible.
Kenny with the Booker T hatred today.
He's crap.
The...
He's terrible. His analysis is so mundane, and he is detrimental. When he's around talent, he is detrimental to them. And
you
I
know,
was...
it's funny because, like, Meltzer and Alvarez were talking that they would much rather have Booker T than David Otunga. I disagree.
I would rather have
David Otunga than Booker T, because at least... I feel like Corey Graves is sort of pigeonholed here because Booker T often takes the side of the heels for no reason, just because he feels like it on a whim. And that's kind of Corey Graves' spot, right? As to where with David Otunga, he would often take the side of the baby faces.
But you know, Otunga, you know, this is very unpopular. When Otunga had good people around him, he was okay. He wasn't great,
no,
but he was okay.
He was I very rarely noticed him being terrible, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there is that. But anyways, though, back to the Cass thing. I think, and this may be a unpopular opinion, I know a lot of people were really looking forward to Enzo getting his ass kicked. I felt really bad for Enzo. And it elicited the correct response. And this was good heat. This was the good kind of heat. And I know you and I very much disagree on the women's ladder match finish,
yep.
but that was bad heat, according to me. This was good heat, according to me. This is the kind of heat, it made me dislike Cass. And even though I didn't care for Enzo, it still made me dislike Cass and feel bad for Enzo. And that... I think if you had two performers out there who were lesser performers, you wouldn't feel that. So I think it's very much a credit to both Enzo and Cass. Enzo was shedding real tears here. It felt like Cass was doing a work shoot almost, saying that the reason that he hasn't won any gold is because of Enzo, because no one likes him backstage. There's truth to that, you know? And the best promo is something that feels real. It's something that shines a light on something that is real, something that you're not supposed to hear, something that you're not supposed to know. And they really captured the essence of that. I loved what Cass had to say and how he said it. I loved how upset and heartbroken Enzo was. It brought out the best in these two guys. And I think that this performance prolonged Enzo's career. I think Enzo was going directly into the crapper before this, but because he shed real tears and he was actually upset by it, I think that he has a spot now in the company for at least a little while, at least 6 months, no matter what.
My only worries coming out of this, I thought this was great. I thought everybody played their part really well. I think it's the most interesting thing that Enzo and Cass have ever done. My two issues going forward is I think that Cass is a little bit bland in some ways, and I think that once he's done with Enzo, it's going to be like basically like a seesaw as to whether this works for him or not. So he needs to just take the ball with anything he's given, even if he's given creative that's not great. Like, he needs to knock it out of the park every time.
Or even better than that, go back and say, hey, this isn't great. Can we work on this?
Yeah, because most of the time, like, they're not going to hate the fact that you want to like change some stuff up. It's just the way you do it.
Right, right. And you only get one shot, man. You only get one shot to make an impression, and you got to do a good job.
And yeah, I think Enzo would actually be a really good asset to 205 Live.
Yeah, no, I do as well. I think that he would do very well there. And even if he just became a mouthpiece or a manager, I think that he would excel in that role too.
That single tier that he had was really well done.
No, it was just great. The entire segment knocked it out of the park. You know, I saw a lot of people complaining that they were giving Enzo and Cass the main event spot. And afterwards, I was just like, fucking eat that crow, motherfucker. Eat it. Eat it and enjoy, because they knocked it out of the park. As for me, I'm just going to sit back and keep an open mind. I'm going to sit back and see where this takes us. I'm optimistic, though, and they do have my full attention.
What did you think of this episode of Raw as a number?
It kind of dragged a bit, but the good stuff was really good. The main event really drew me in. I love watching Samoa Joe just do anything. I think that he's excellent. The Drifter now feuding with Finn is a major step back for Finn and for our hopes and dreams. I would give this a 7, because while the good stuff propelled it forward, there was some stuff that held it back. Namely, the Drifter feuding with Finn, and the Miz having two lackeys now, which, ugh.
Ugh. I think I'm gonna give it a 7. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's where it hits. It was an above average show. I think that the Enzo attack thing's been really well played out. I think everyone's played their part well. I like the Big Show and the Revival being part of it. I like the Joe and Roman and Braun stuff. The return of Braun Strowman is fantastic. The Goldust segment was good. I think the women's stuff was probably the thing that got me the most. Like, because the thing is, you know, obviously, like, you've seen, you know, I was maybe in the minority that liked the Money in the Bank thing. And I think that this was probably the worst possible time to have such a crappy women's angle on Raw. I think you needed to have something good here. I'm hopeful that SmackDown will sort of do something tonight to regain that a little bit. But I have more confidence in SmackDown, to be honest, of that kind of thing. But I thought the show was decent overall. It held my attention, and you know, we're about 3 weeks away from really sort of starting to build SummerSlam. So I'm looking forward to Great Balls of Fire in a couple of weeks. So it should be decent.
Yeah, no, it should be a good show. That very day, actually, I am going to a wrestling show that will feature Cody Rhodes versus Michael Elgin, and Mara Fuji is coming over from Japan.
Wow.
As well.
Is that in St. Louis? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Over the greater St. Louis metro region, so about 25 minutes from my house.
Lovely. So, lovely stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Amazing stuff. So I get to go and see that and meet Cody Rhodes and Mara Fuji and then come right back and enjoy Great Balls of Fire.
Make sure and wear your Inside the Ropes t-shirt to meet Cody. You'll get a kick out of that.
Oh, I definitely will. To be fair, I wear my Inside the Ropes t-shirt to all of my local St. Louis wrestling functions. That way, if you see me in person, stop and say hello.
Well, you know, it's funny. One of my friends, Jamie, he went to Florida with his family last couple of weeks, and he had an Inside the Ropes t-shirt on, and he was walking in a mall in Florida, and this guy just, like, saw him across the mall and went, "Hey, Inside the Ropes!"
Ah.
and Jamie was like, I was so caught off guard that I didn't quite know what to do. So and then John from Poughkeepsie, New York was tweeting us the other day. He had our t-shirt repping us at the NXT house show. So I love when people rep the shirts. It's very cool, very kind to us. We appreciate it very much.
Kenny, by the way, you are welcome now, because the Inside the Ropes brand can be seen whenever they go, "Oh, look at that ugly fat bald guy singing the Sami Zayn song on the Money in the Bank." So you're welcome. Around the world, people can view that now. So you're welcome.
I think that what impresses me the most is it took David 91 minutes to do that.
I was waiting for a thank you. That's the only reason it took me so long. But since you just didn't appreciate the kind gesture, then I had to bust out the "you're welcome."
I'll tell you what I'll do as a token of my appreciation.
Yes.
I give you my friendship, David.
Can I get a refund?
My friendship costs £7 with a slight sprinkling of cheese. Anyway, you can
get... Is there a gift receipt?
No store credit. David, what's your Twitter handle?
You can find me and tell me all about your ghost stories at ZoopSoul on Twitter. That's ZOOPSOUL. I would ask if I'm great, but Kenny, I know that you know I'm great, because I was on television repping Inside the Ropes. What about you? Where are you on the tweeters?
You can get me on Twitter at KennyMC1985. You can be one of the many to berate me for having a different opinion on a
pig.
Because that's the thing. It's like, I totally get people don't like something or people do like it. My issue is like telling me that my opinion is less valid because of my gender. That's where my issue comes in. I get, and you know, I do want to just say on the podcast so that people hear me, I know there's a lot of our female listeners who have felt on social media that their voice has been belittled by people, and I would never say that's cool, but at the same time, I think what you need to do is, I think it's important to converse with people like that sometimes, because the odd time you might actually be able to get through to them. And sometimes we're in a sort of echo chamber thing, and if we always surround ourselves with the same opinions, it can be difficult. But I think that whatever MD thinks about the women's Money in the Bank match or whatever, whoever wants to talk about it, their opinion is valid for me. So I think as long as you're respectful to people and you know, because I think the thing that gets me is when people start bringing like name calling into it, and I'm like, if you start name calling, it pretty much means you have no leg to stand on, and like that's all you've got is to do that. So you know, try and engage with people. If people are arseholes and resort to name calling, then you know, hit that block button.
There's no
time for that sort of thing. Thanks for listening, everyone. There are quite a lot of Patreon VIP podcasts that David and I are going to be doing soon. So David's now back from E3, so I'm going to coax him into the Patreon machine again very soon. So we will be doing that. Sandra and I
better have a whole lot of candy leading me straight into that thing.
There you go. Sandra and I have a Lucha Underground podcast that goes up tomorrow, and so much more to come. So we're back on a regular schedule. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting us. And remember, next week Goldberg comes to the United Kingdom, Glasgow on the 26th, Manchester on the 27th, London on July 2nd. Once in a lifetime, come and hear him tell his stories. I'll be on stage with him, and it's going to be a hell of a tour. We hope to see you there. Thank you for listening.
Take care, everybody. Be nice to somebody. Pick up some hitchhikers who got deserted by a taxi on the highway. It might make their day a little bit better, or at least make their scalp a little less sunburned.
And remember, if you're seeing a waitress being harassed, don't wait for your garlic fries. Stand up for her.
Those fuckers are going to get cold if you do anything.